Let's begin. We are on Daf Lamed Bet Amud Bet 32B2 in the English. 32B2. And we'll start the sugya at the beginning, even though we began it last time. And that is this sugya about the zaken, about the mitzvah or mitzvot that are connected to the old. Translating zaken as old. Okay, now the English is quite helpful here in that it brings the biblical verse, Leviticus 19:32, and let's make sure we have that in our heads first. We're on 32b2. 32b2 on the left-hand side of the page. The verse is Mipnei seva takum v'hadarta penei zaken v'yareta melokecha ani Hashem. Let's take a look at it for a moment. It has several different parts to it, and I think we should try to translate it and then try to see what it means literally. Mipnei seva takum. The verb is clear, that's takum. Takum, you shall rise, you shall get up. You shall get up. Mipnei, how would you translate mipnei?
When somebody is standing in front of you, before.
That's what I was getting at. Because you translated it literally when you said in the face of. Mipnei, which sometimes is translated as because, or something like that. But if you take the word apart, it means mipnei, from the face of. Mipnei seva. What is seva? No, it's not wisdom. White hair. Seva is clearly white hair. Okay? So, mipnei seva takum, in the face of white hair you shall get up. Here you see the English translation is, before an old man you shall rise. All right? We translate it a little bit differently because we are translating it much more literally. Ve'hadarta b'nei zaken, and you shall, here the English was, you shall honor a, and look at the English, you shall honor a, look at how they translate zaken. Zaken. Because they don't know how to translate zaken because they already used the old person. Right? They used the word old person, and obviously there are two different Hebrew words. And so they weren't sure what to do when they translated the English. But let's look first at the Hadarta. Hadarta is translated here as you shall honor. You shall honor. Last time I pointed out to you that the word Hadar really means what?
Citrus.
No. Hadar means if something is
pleasant.
Hadar. Nedar is pleasant or wonderful.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. All right. So the citrus doesn't mean citrus, but that fruit is a gorgeous fruit. It's a very beautiful fruit. Okay, that's the way the Torah speaks of it. It's pre Eitz Hadar, the fruit of a tree that is Hadar. So Hadar literally means beautiful, beautiful. Here you see it's translated as. You shall honor zaken. And I would say that's the most common way to translate it, but it doesn't mean that. It means you shall make beautiful the zaken. Let it be at least imagined that a zaken is not necessarily beautiful. Okay? I mean, that's an interesting thing to think about. If you look at the magazines that we have in our society, for example, I would say probably 80% of the notion of beauty is to get rid of aging. Right? Not all of it, because some of it is just to, you know, even the young don't want to look the way they are supposed to look, the way they were born to look. So it's not all that. but a tremendous amount of it is to get rid of aging. Okay? And here you see Vahadartar, you shall make beautiful Pnei, the face. Just think about that. Literally then, the Pnei, because going back to what I just said, so much of this is on the panim. You have to get rid of the face that makes you look old. And you have to make sure you have a young face. So this is, you shall make beautiful the face of the zaken. Now zaken, the common translation of zaken is old person. Old person. Keep in mind the Hebrew word that has the same letters but different vowels, which is zakan. Zakan, which is a beard. A beard. So you can see that there's an association of zaken with zakan. And here we see that you are to make beautiful the face of the zaken. You shall honor a zaken. Well, maybe that's what it means. Maybe that's the bottom line. But of course, so far I don't know what it means. I mean, I can see some sentiments involved. I know what it means to get up. I don't know what it means to make something or someone beautiful. That's
maybe
much.
To make him feel good.
Maybe that's what it means. Maybe it's to make him feel good. That's possible.
It's
surely possible.
Like you give him the seat.
Okay. Well, that's a good way to think about it. If you take the first part, in the Israeli bus, in the front seats on the bus, it says, Mipnei seiva takum. Right? In other words, get up for the old. Get up for the old. It's the quotation for the first part of this verse. That's what is on the bus. Just the way we have something similar on our buses, they quote the scriptures, because the scriptures is obviously a concern of the scriptures. So you get up, and maybe it is that when you get up, you make the person feel beautiful. Maybe that's the heart of it. But keep that in mind.
To see that they're grooming.
What?
Maybe it's to help them be groomed.
Maybe.
People can't do that.
Possible. 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 Keep in mind, when we are talking about a zaken here, we've actually made a transition from our previous discussion. Our previous discussion was about kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, honor your father and your mother, and then ish imo v'aviv tirau, a person should revere his mother and his father. Those were the two mitzvot that we were reading about. Now there, and we read the meaning of kabed was to feed, to give drink, to put mechaseh, to cover a person. So there were a variety of direct services that were being required. Keep in mind here, we actually have made a transition. It's not hard to understand that one might require a child to do that for a parent. Because you say to yourself, well, who could do it? On the other hand, would you require everybody to do it? Unlikely. We wouldn't require everybody to do it. Because we would assume that there's a realm of the private here, which is determined by the nature of the relationship between parent and child. And because the parent invests in the child, in a way there's a moral obligation for the child to invest in the parent. So we can understand that ethical context. Here we make a transition when we're dealing with the zaken, because we're not talking about any particular relationship that exists. Right? A zaken means any old person. Any old person. So that suddenly we've created a generic old person. And in fact, we are telling everybody in the society that they have to treat this stratum of the population, whether or not they have any relationship to it, or to this particular one, with a certain level of deference. So that's really quite different. It's really quite different. And it's important to think about that you step in a system, in an ethical system, and you say there is a whole piece of the population that needs to be treated differently. Okay? So we see the first two parts we've got, Mipnei Sevatakum and Vahadarta Pnei Zakein, but it doesn't end there. It actually goes on. And it says, V'yareta me'elokecha, you shall fear your gods. Alright, here we have fear again. But it's not fear of the parent. It's directly related to God. You shall fear your God. And that apparently, I mean, it's not exactly clear what the relation is to the first two parts of the verse, but since it's all one verse, there appears to be some relationship, some need. I mean, there is enough of an idea which we've expressed so far to not need this. Sounds like a good idea that you should treat the old in a certain level, with a certain level of respect. And here you see that there is a theological side that's brought in. You shall fear your God. And then it's even more weighty than that, because the verse ends with one of these declarations of the Lord. Ani Hashem, I am the Lord. So I think even to begin with, before we get to any details, that's a drum roll at the end. All the stops are pulled out on the organ, and the Lord proclaims, I am the Lord, underlining the significance of what we've read before. Right? So this apparently is big stuff. From God's perspective, this is important enough for him to say, I am the Lord. Right? Either that, or could also be an invocation of authority. That is to say, it's just this kind of thing that nobody will pay attention to.
I think that's the reason, because nobody can control it, so it's only a fear of God that will make
okay,
it.
Okay, so maybe that's it. Or maybe, let's go even further than that, maybe it's counterintuitive. Namely, that maybe the people that you have to be nice to, you don't necessarily want to be nice to. Okay? Maybe they're not nice. Or maybe the fact that you have no relationship to them is in a way something that's an interference with your own life. And yet you see created here a category, and the trumpet at the end saying that I am the Lord, and maybe because it's not intuitive. It's a non-intuitive thing. Okay? Any questions so far? Yes.
There's another group of people, Al Tasim Michshol Iver, or I don't know if there God put himself up front as...
Well, let's take one at a time, because I don't know, I'm not even sure what that means. Right?
Did you say that?
He just quoted a verse, you shall not put a stumbling block before the blind. Okay? So I'm not sure what that means. So, and I don't want to go into that now, but that verse has many possible meanings. Okay? It can be a metaphor.
Right.
It can be a metaphor.
But it's a group of people.
Once it becomes a metaphor, it becomes very different, to tell you the truth. Yes?
Oh, I just wanted to know, is there something to be learned from this formulation, V'yareta me elokecha, the me, you should fear... Should have fear from your God. It doesn't say the Elokecha Tira'u like in the previous with Kaveret Avichaviyat Imecha.
The Tira'u.
Yeah.
Well, I would say yes. I mean, probably. Let's think of the alternatives that could be. It could be the Areta Elokecha. You shall fear your God. So that would be a statement which is that you should fear God. But if it's Yareta Me'elohecha, probably it's relating the fear of God to what just came before it. You shall fear from your God. In other words, listen to this, because otherwise you shall fear from your God.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right?
It's a no-no, right. So, and that's just the strength of that is from the mem in the beginning of the word. You're right.
There's another underlying thing here. The whole thing has to do with the social order. And when you fear your elders, then you fear your leaders, and your leaders represent
that's a good point.
The higher authority.
Okay, that's a good point.
It creates a whole hierarchy on top of which, like a pyramid, and God stands at the top.
That's a good point.
The word of God comes through the prophets and the leaders, and it's all has to do with social order.
I think that's a very good point. Let's remember that there is a social order here, and at the top of the social order is God, okay? And if you have people who are at higher levels there, one of the things that we are seeing is that the Zaken is at a high level, which is an interesting observation. It's not the only possible way of reacting to the Zaken. Surely other ways to think about it, okay? That would also lead us to wonder what the Zaken has in common with God. Okay, because the Zaken, if the Zaken is up there, then the question is why? Why is the Zaken up there? Well, it could be that. I mean, it could be proximity. Could be proximity that the Zaken is close to the end of the life cycle. And in fact, one of the things that the Zaken reminds you about is your own finitude. Right? And that reminds you about God. So that's a possibility. Surely, it's not the only possibility, but it's one possibility. Okay? Anybody else? Okay. Yes.
All right. So you're interpreting Zaken as just age-wise and not higher in society or all elderly because of their proximity, because they're old and possibly the end of the life cycle? Or we are assuming that a rabbi who's old may be more revered than the person that's just being old?
That's correct. You're absolutely right. And in truth, that's what the Gemara is going to start discussing right now, because the Gemara is not content with this simple understanding of the word Zaken. The Gemara really needs to know more about what is implied by the word. Okay? So let's look at the Gemara now. Tanu Rabbanan is a Baraita. The Baraita will analyze the verse. The assumption is that we knew the verse ahead of time. The Talmud doesn't bring the verse, just this translation brought the verse, which was of help to us. The rabbis taught in a Braita. Mipnei sevad takum. Right? Quotes the first part of the verse. Before white hair you shall get up.
Page 132.
Okay. Before white hair you shall get up. Meaning you shall rise before the old. Okay. So the Gemara says, Yachol afilu mipnei zaken ashmai. Now, do we assume that this includes a zaken who is an old person who is an ashmai? An ashmai. Now, we don't know what ashmai means yet. Let's take a look at Rashi. Let's see where the Rashi is. Rashi is about one quarter of the way down the page on the Rashi.
This is 32b3.
Rashi is in the Hebrew. Okay, so Rashi is they're all the same. 32b1, b2, b3, they're all the same on the Hebrew side. Right. I'm looking at the Hebrew side. Just go over. Remember the Rashi is on the inside margin.
Right.
Well, not exactly on the inside, but the inside margin as far as the Talmud text goes. About a quarter of the way down, right at the beginning of the line, it says Zaken Ashmai. Right? Did you find it?
9 lines down in the big text, right across from the
it's translation.
Okay. So Rashi takes. It's a hard word, Ashmai. We don't know what the word Ashmai means. Not a normal Hebrew word. It appears to be some kind of Aramaic word or an Aramaic form of a Hebrew word. And this will happen in the Talmud. So Rashi understands it to mean Ashmai from Asham, Ashame, Ashame. Somebody who's Ashame is guilty. Guilty. Rasha. And then he glosses Rasha, wicked. Somebody who is wicked, the Am Haaretz. So there are two sides to Rashi's understanding of this. The Zaken Ashmai is Rasha v'Am Haaretz. He is both wicked and dumb. All right, he's wicked and uneducated. Okay? But the wicked part is, as far as Rashi is concerned, important. Now let's think what this means. So what we are saying here, the Gemara is asking, Yachol afilu zaken ashmai. When it says that you have to honor the old, you have to stand up in front of the old, does that include the old person who's wicked? Okay? Now that's an interesting question. If you're going to honor somebody, you assume that there is something about that somebody that's worthy of honor. So if we have, so the first thing that Gemara does is set up an opposite problem, an antithesis here. There's an antithesis. The opposite of the zaken that we assume there's some quality to the person. The person has there's a reason that you should honor them. What if they're wicked? What if they're wicked? Okay, according to Rashi. I will look at something else in just a little bit, but let's go back into the Talmud. All right, Yachol, you might have thought, afilu zaken ashmai, that where it says that you shall stand up before the old, that applies also to a zaken who is wicked. Answer is, Talmud Lamar, therefore the Torah comes and says, zaken. The Torah starts out by saying, mipnei seva takum. First part just talks about white hair. The second part, in a way, explains the first part. The word zaken has another sense to it, not only meaning old, zaken. The ein zaken ela chacham. The word zaken clearly indicates somebody who is a chacham, who is wise. Shenamar, as it says, Esfa li shivim ish mizikne Yisrael. Gather to me from among the people of Israel, 70 elders. All right, that's in the book of Numbers. Moses gathers together 70 elders, and the elders are elders. Not only that they're old, but there the sense is that they are a council of wise. They're the council of the wise. Okay? So here, the second half of the verse, which has the word zaken, helps to explain the first half of the verse. It says, "Mipnei seva takum." Seva doesn't tell us whether the person is wise or not. So therefore the second half comes, uses the word zaken. The word zaken also implies wise. And therefore we learn that, at least according to this opinion, that the zaken ashmai, the one who is wicked, doesn't deserve to have this respect or honor. Okay? Now let's take a look at the Tosafot. Let's take a look at the Tosafot. Now, hold your horses with this. We've only read one point of view. This is the Talmud. The Talmud is not a book of philosophy. The Talmud is a book of different points of view. So you have to have a statement of one point of view, because guess what? Somebody is going to disagree with it. We're actually going to have several points of view here. Okay? Okay. Look at the top of the Tosafot. The Tosafot now, remember the Tosafot are the children of Rashi, the generation and two generations after Rashi. So now we're in France, the beginning of the 12th century. We're in France, in the Rashi is the end of the 11th century. He dies in 1105, so very, very beginning of the 12th century. So now we're reading the end of the previous century and now the 12th century. These are Frenchmen. Zaken Ashmai. Perash Bekuntres. Kuntres. What is a kuntres in Hebrew?
Booklet.
A booklet. So you see that the Tosafot were reading Rashi in booklets. In fact, he was, to the extent that they were, he was published, you're still 400 years before the printing press. Right? Or 300 plus years before the printing press. So Rashi is written in booklets. He's not with the text. Correct. He's not with the text. These were booklets that the students had. And that's why when you're a Talmudist and you refer, sometimes you will refer to kuntres. Kuntres comes to mean Rashi.
Really?
Kuntres itself means Rashi. In what you call Gemara Lashon, in Gemara language, Kuntres means Rashi. Okay? I once had, famous Jewish scholar who went on the warpath because he saw that some of the students in the seminary didn't know what Kuntres was. What's the matter with them? They don't teach them anything. You know? But we know Kuntres is. Somebody didn't do their homework, that's all. They didn't do their homework. So Perash B'Kuntres, it is explained in the Kuntres, in the notebooks, namely in Rashi, Ashmai Rasha V'Ama Aretz. Oh, so here he's quoting. We're quoting the Rashi. V'Kashe, and the Tosafot say, and this is difficult. This is difficult. Why? Dehechi Kamar Isi Ben Yehuda, we are going to see later on in the Talmud that another teacher called Isi Ben Yehuda says, Deseva Mashma Afilu Zaken Ashmai, that when you use the word seva, white hair, it includes even a Zaken Ashmai. V'halo mitzvah afilu lahakoto levazoto lezalzalo. And if the person were really wicked, the person should get stripes. And you don't have to respect the person who's wicked. I mean, we're living through one of these right now. You know that. You see what's happening today, yesterday, tomorrow. What's the news tomorrow?
Madoff.
It's all, and that's what we're thinking about. Okay?
A Jew, of all things.
I didn't even want to say that. Thank you, Francis. At this stage, I'm worried he's old. All right? He's an old man. And an old man is supposed to be worthy of respect. You know, the one thing that drives me crazy on these television broadcasts I've made of, you can see whether it drives you crazy. They took photographs... video of him the first time that he went out when this whole thing was explored,
and it looks like he's punching the photographer
because it must be that somebody pushed him. Every time I see that, I get so upset, because I mean, if they drawed and quartered the guy, it wouldn't be enough. I mean, that you pull out his fingernails is an easy sentence. No sentence is worthy of... Elie Wiesel said it. Elie Wiesel, God help him, wonderful man, lost his fortune from this crook, this thief, this evil man. But I still get upset because he's a man in white hair and I see him punching somebody, and somebody, I assume, is hitting him. It just hurts me. I can't deal with that. It's just something that I don't want to see. So... here, but he's an Ashmai, and an Ashmai, do you have to treat an Ashmai with respect? The Tosafot are saying, if we eventually learn that even a Zaken Ashmai, Isi Ben Yehuda will eventually say, is worthy of respect, do you think that includes somebody who is evil? No, it can't include somebody who is evil. Right, you don't stand up for such a person. Therefore, they have to have another explanation. Peresh Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, who is Rashi's grandson, translates the following. Ashmai Lashon Shomemim. Ashmai comes from the word Shomem. What is Shomem in Hebrew? It's barren.
Desolate.
Kamo Pitchei Shamadi Minachot, that's a chapter in the Talmud, Klomar, Bor Va'am Ha'aretz. That's the way the Tosafot understands. A bor and an am ha'aretz. So it's the same thing in English, a bor.
Are we the same word?
So it's the same word.
Uncouth.
It's uncouth. Somebody who is, well, but here the emphasis is not on wicked, but on lack of any education. Lack of any education. So here this clarifies a few things. First of all, we understand a little bit more what the meaning of Zaken Ashmai is. that the issue here that the rabbis are really debating is the question of whether somebody who is uneducated is worthy of being included in the mitzvah of mipnei sevatakum. Okay? Why? Because the question is, what are we honoring? What are we honoring? And perhaps we are honoring the Torah. Right? The assumption here is that education means education in the Torah. And therefore, as a person accrues the Torah, in fact, you are honoring the Torah that's in the person. Maybe even that's the fear of God at the end of the verse. Okay? So that's why it's a difficult issue. It's an issue that has to be figured out, the extent to which Torah itself is the key to the notion of honor. Okay?
It's a now, membership.
Excuse me?
It's a membership in a club.
Maybe. It might be. I'm not saying it is, but I'm just trying to sense where the Gemara is going with this. Now, you'll see it even stronger in what's going to come up. Let's wait for the next one. Look what Rabbi Yossi Aglili says. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, Ein zaken ela misha kana chokhmah. Now, it's not clear at this point whether Rabbi Yossi Aglili is simply clarifying what was just said, or he's adding another opinion. But let's understand what he says first of all. Ein zaken, there is no zaken, or the word zaken can only mean, that's really what I think it means here, mishakana chokhma. Right? Mishakana chokhma. And probably what he is doing is taking the word zaken and turning it into the first letters of three words. Zeh. Little with a sh in between, kana, zeshakana, basically.
What does kana mean?
Acquired. The one who has acquired chokhmah, wisdom. Okay, the one who has acquired. Wisdom being the implied thing here, because it goes on and it says, Shememar Hashem kanani reshit darko. The Lord has acquired me, namely, this is wisdom speaking. This is wisdom speaking in Proverbs. Shem Kanani Reshit Darko, the beginning of his paths. Okay? And Reshit is also Reshit Chochma Yirat Hashem. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. Okay? Reshit is beginning, associated with chokhmah, wisdom, with the Lord.
Position.
Okay. So, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, in fact, the term zaken refers specifically to one who is wise. So in a way, this is bolstering the opinion that we just read, which is to say that the zaken ashmai, according to the Tosafot, is a zaken who has no wisdom, has no education, is not to be included in the mitzvah of mipnei sevatakum.
Okay? Now, do you know it?
What?
And now someone know it on the bus?
We didn't get to the end of the discussion. We didn't finish the discussion.
In this discussion, they jump back and forth between seva and zaken.
Correct.
Interchangeable. In fact, in one sentence.
That is correct.
Maybe the whole idea is you're talking about two separate groups and two separate ways of treating two separate groups. In one case, you're expected to rise, and that's a gesture without any direct contact. The other, you are hadarta pnei zaken. You are actually being asked maybe to see this person not for the physical appearance, but for something, some inner quality, which would be his chachma, wisdom.
So okay,
zaken
certainly
is a wise
possible.
Person, the seva is simply an old person.
Could be. It could be. Well, that's one way to understand it. That's surely one way to understand it. But we will have to see whether there are limits here, whether we can prevail upon people to honor the old, what to know about the Zaken Hashmai. Do we honor the Zaken Hashmai as well? Keep in mind something else here, that the word Zaken, one of the things that this is giving away, and we're sort of moving away from the old person partially, because the word Zaken, which was referred to before, in fact can mean elder.
Can mean what?
Elder. Elder. Elder.
Zaidi.
And the question is, no, not Zaidi. An elder of the community, let's say. The question is, how old do you have to be an elder? The word elder,
the age limit, then.
The elder, even in English, I think we would want to clarify when you would use a term elder. For example, we know in Greek literature, for example, you know the term gerontology.
Yeah.
Geron is a Greek word. Mm-hmm. Gerontes, it was a council of elders. Gerontes is a council of elders. When you say in Hebrew, the Zakenim say, okay, what does that mean? It means the elders, okay? Okay, so the question that we're going to have to deal with is, how old do you have to be an elder?
Getting
is
older there, and older.
Excuse me?
Older and older.
Older and older.
The older we get.
But if being a Zaken doesn't mean old, maybe it doesn't mean an old at all.
It could be wise.
Maybe it just means wise. Or maybe it means wise and old. But those are two different things.
What was the age of, what was the, at what age did they live till in the times we're talking about?
70. Uh-huh. Okay, so that's reasonable age.
Yeah.
I think it can safely be said that the number of Zkenim Ashmaim as a part of the total Zkenim is not really very large, so to condemn.
So that's what you think. Glad you think that.
Don't take away my optimism.
Well, you have a vested interest in this, I think.
When I go to the bus, I take off my hat.
Nobody moves.
Well, that's
how few young people get up and go for a seat to anybody.
When I, at this stage of my life, have enough. See, unfortunately, I don't have the hair you have. Which is not to say I don't have gray hair. I don't have hair.
I envy him.
No, the key thing, though, is the more you wear a sign, as it were, if you have gray hair or white hair, or if you have a long beard and it's white, those are signs. So whenever somebody offers me a seat on the bus or on the subway, I always take it.
That's right.
I always take it. And the reason that I take it, and I'm going to say who offers it to me, because it's always the same type of person who offers it. And I'll tell you who that person is. The person who offers it, I think it's very important to reinforce that gesture. It's a good gesture. And the tendency of ever so many people who are my contemporaries is to be embarrassed by it and to reject the gesture. You know, I'm not old, I'm young, all right? Well, that's not true. It's not true. Thank God I'm healthy, but, you know, I'm also 65. And an awful lot of people my age are also dead. More of them are dying all the time, and I know it. Believe me, I know it. I think about it day and night, all right? This is the reality. This is the reality. So I think it's really great to reinforce this in the population where this is something nobody understands, or hardly anybody understands. I get crazy when the little kids run on the bus and the maids give them the seats. Yeah. I want to throw all those kids off because they don't have to be on the, I understand they're unruly, it's hard for the maids, I understand that. But the old people are supposed to get the seats. and let alone the old people who really need the seats, not the big shots like me, who just sort of want to take advantage of the situation, but the old people who really need it. So who is it that offers the seats? I find they're nearly always Hispanics. Hispanics. And I assume they go to church and they learn these things in church. Never a Jewish person. Once in a while a Jewish person. Rarely. It's the Hispanics who are going to be the future of the world. Male or female? Mostly female.
In Spanish culture, mama is very...
Well, God bless them. They should, if they take over the world, they deserve it. That's all I can tell you. Any culture that, in the Western culture, I see in New York that the Hispanic people are, many of them are sensitive to this, and it's unusual. I mean, when was the last time that you had a black person get up and give you a seat? Once in a while, you have a religious black person. Jewish person, forget it. This doesn't cross the radar. God bless the Hispanic people. Of course, in other cultures, you have the Far Eastern cultures where this is also a natural thing. If you don't do it, you die in a far. The Japanese, they'd probably cut off your head if you don't get up.
Correct.
So you see,
we don't have anything in writing.
You better believe it. This is so basic to our culture.
There's some things, though, that have come through, even if you don't read it in the original. It's interesting what things have gotten dropped, because there are things that are persistent without anybody having read it, but it comes through the family mores and it just gets continue. But this
I can understand why this is a problem. I mean, the whole culture the whole culture wants to deny age.
Yeah.
And that's a very basic piece of our culture.
But it's also
I think there are two other elements I would comment on. I always tell young medical students, it used to be that doctors became more and more valuable as they aged. Mm-hmm. Because they were repositories of clinical knowledge and wisdom that you simply couldn't get, no matter how smart you were, without having actually seen a lot of patients. Now, of course, with the internet and access to being able to search, in fact, it's inverted. Older physicians are suspect because their skill set may not be as well, they may not be up to date. So we've completely inverted the whole structure of respect for age from the standpoint of professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really a key point of our society that underlies a lot of the changes that we're talking about. The other comment I would make is that I really wonder whether or not intrinsic in all of this, sort of hidden behind the scenes, isn't the notion in the Torah that because we're all descendants of Adam, no one can say their father is more powerful or better than someone else's father. If you play that out a little bit, not too far, you can actually, on a semi-genetic basis, come to the conclusion that, in fact, everybody is a piece of your father because they reflect the structure of that generation, following generations. So whatever honor is due to your father, a piece of that may actually be due to anyone who is an elder.
You couldn't be more right. I completely agree with this. Let me get back to these very points that you're making, because I just like a little bit more evidence. I want to show you the evidence for exactly what you're saying, because it presupposes that we're going to come to the conclusion that we should honor all the elders, or all the old people, which in fact we are going to come to that conclusion. But let's wait till we get to that conclusion first. Let's do the legwork first until we get there, okay?
Well, one, it's a bit of the improvement, it's a bit of a false perception, which many of us see in youngsters. They have access, but not judgment, and the power of analysis, or the ability to initiate a novel construction, which is really why there tends to be a false assumption on their part that they're the manipulators of information and therefore the repository of that information and understanding is that to them. And my other point would be, this speaks to your own sensibility that you presumed in that videotape that that there was an assault that made up for it. I never presumed that. He is a highly presumptuous personality, was severely disturbed as well in his perception of the other. I think his presumption just didn't want anyone that within his vicinity.
Good for you. Very good. Very good.
But that may be true. That would stand to reason in terms of his personality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, good. Good. Let's keep going. Now, the Talmud is going to, in a way, take a break from this analysis and go into a more careful analysis of the verse itself to flesh out some of the practical ramifications of what we learn from this verse. Yachol yamod mipanav mimakom rachok. Now, understand this construction. We've already seen one type of construction, an argument like this. It's a yachol this. The Talmud says yachol such and such and such and such. It sets up a hypothesis. And once you have it, it begins with the yachol, you know that hypothesis is going to be destroyed. And it will be destroyed on the basis of a biblical verse. Okay? So you might translate in the following way. You might, when you see this yachol construction, it's a way of saying, you might have thought, right? It's a you might have thought kind of type of construction. I say this to you because in no way is it a translation of the Hebrew. It's just an idiomatic translation of Gemara Lashon. Okay? So, Yachol Yamod Mipanav Mimakom Rachot, you might have thought, because you're supposed to get up before an old person, that you should do it from a distance, Mirachok, from far away. Alright? Talmud Lamar Takum Vahadarta. Therefore, you have two verbs in the sentence. You shall get up, and you shall make beautiful. Alright? Lo amarti kima ele b'malkom sheyesh hidur. I only say that you're supposed to get up in a situation where it is clearly beautifying. That is to say, the person's got to be close enough to you so that the person is in direct contact with you and will realize what you're doing. Alright, so in other words, the person's got to be more or less in your direct close vicinity. Because the action is meant to respond to a presence, to the presence of the other person. Alright, now we go further. Yachol yahadrenu b'mamamon. Maybe, do we say that when you beautify the person, you should beautify them with money? Now here I think, contrary to the commentary here, I think that what this means is that even if it involves some expense, even if it involves some expense. Now, where would it involve an expense? The easiest place would involve an expense is if you're doing something else, you're making a living. Okay, you're making a living, you're working on something, and the old person walks by. You have to get up. Well, time is money. So you are giving up your earning in order to fulfill the mitzvah of the Torah. Okay? So the question is, do you have to do this? So as soon as you see the construction again, yachol, you know it's going to be destroyed. So in other words, yachol yahadran v'mamon, do we say that you have to spend money on this? Talmud lomar, takum v'hadarta. Okay, first we learn from hadarta about takum. Now we're going to learn about takum v'hadarta. V'hadarta, ma kima she'in b'chesron kis. It doesn't cost you anything to stand up. Similarly, it doesn't have to cost you anything to make a person feel beautiful. Okay, so in other words, this, it doesn't involve any expenditure of funds. and you don't have to lose anything. Well, this is not so simple for the Gemara. The Gemara will wonder about this. But it goes on.
You don't.
No, keep. Yachol yamod mipana mi beta kise ume beta merchatz. You might have thought that you have to get up if you're in the latrine. That's an interesting one. Okay, you've got a communal latrine. And the people are sitting on the seat. An old person gets up. Do you have to stand up? You don't think the Talmud talks about everyday life, you see. Talmud, I can imagine. Did some of you are my contemporaries. You remember that program, Bilko?
Sergeant Bilko.
I thought nobody would remember it. So, obviously, this was a very... Doberman, right. You remember, these are the important people in our lives. So, that would be a Bilko skit. You don't know what we're talking about. You're Israelis,
it's
but
before my time.
Yeah, it's before your time, correct.
So, my time being when I came here.
This is Phil Silvers, who was a terrific comedian. He was just a wonderful comedian. This was one of these World War II comedies. For years after World War II, just these comedy routines were based on World War II life. But that would be a Bilko routine. Okay.
Thank you for that.
you needed me to tell you that, right?
Make us feel young.
Okay, so it's wait, what are we learning here? I forgot what I'm saying. Okay, so we said the Beit HaKiseh, the latrine, or the Beit HaMerchatz. The Beit HaMerchatz is the bathhouse. Keep in mind that before you had private baths, people would get washed in a bathhouse. That was a basic feature of any civilized community, was to have a public bath. So the question is, in the public bath, first of all, there's a lot of nudity in the public baths. And do the normal customs which operate outside the bathhouse function also inside the bathhouse? Okay? So you might have thought that this applies to both of those situations, Talmud Lomar, but the Torah comes and puts the two verbs together in the same sentence, Takum Vandarta. Alright? Takum Vandarta. Lo Amarti Kima, the only time that I say that you have to get up is B'makom Shiyei Shidur, in a place that's a dignified place. Right? Neither of those places are places of dignity. The latrine for obvious reasons, and the bathhouse because of the nudity there. Okay, so neither of those. Now, interesting that dignity is associated with clothing. Dignity is, and in the Torah that is absolutely true, dignity is associated with clothing. Very important part of the assumption about clothing.
Don't we have an expression, Hod v'hadar lavashta?
Oh, correct, that's about God. Hod v'hadar lavashta.
You wear it.
You wear, correct. Very, very important, very important.
I was once in a Japanese bathhouse.
Uh-huh.
And it was fascinating because they also didn't do a lot of bowing to each other in the bathhouse.
That's exactly the issue.
But the most interesting thing was that there was a very old man, and he needed his attendant. And his attendant was a woman. And it was in the men's,
bathhouse.
And everybody just made like they didn't see this.
Correct.
Out of respect
for the elderly person,
embarrass him or to embarrass her, but it was just this incredible sense of invisibility. But it was clearly based upon a very structured sense of what was decorous
to the old person,
honor,
to give him honor,
especially people
to wash your back.
In Japanese bathhouse.
Excellent. Okay, we go on. Another yachol.
Japan, here I come.
Yeah, another yachol. Yachol yatzi meinav kemisha lo ra'ahu. All right, we might have said that the person who is supposed to get up could close his eyes and make believe that he didn't see anything. That's a very common thing that we do.
Yeah.
It's to turn our attention in another direction because we don't want to be bothered by this social ethic that seems to be suddenly presented to us, and it's inconvenient. Okay? So Yechol Yatzi Meinav Kamosha Lo Ra'ahu, as if he didn't see him. Talmud Lamar, therefore the Torah says, Takum V'yareta, you shall get up and you shall fear God.
I think,
okay, Yareta, you shall fear God. So that, look, the other person won't know. It's true. The other person, you may be able to move your eyes in the other direction. The other person won't be aware of the fact that you've seen him. But God can see. God sees everything, all right? So here, the universal presence of the divine means that there is no way to hide from this obligation. That this obligation is it's not all over, because we see some places where, in fact, it's not incumbent, but with that exception, you cannot hide from it.
Could have a play on words here, Ve'areta, and put the yud in another place, Ve'raita.
Ve'areta, Ve'raita. All right? You shall fear you that you shall be seen. Okay? Okay, so we had several yachols here, that yachol construction you might have thought. And we see in every case, it has helped us to understand the biblical verse. And we now see the biblical verse had three verbs in it. Takum, right, hadarta, and viareta. So it's three verbs. And all three verbs now figure into the elucidation of the concept.
Could you translate them once more?
Takum, you shall get up. The adarta, you shall make beautiful, or you shall honor. Okay. And the third, yareta, you shall fear. You shall fear from your God. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar amer minayin lezaken shelo yatriach. Oh, now that we brought up the fact that you're not allowed to hide your eyes from the zaken, that you have to get up anyway, well, we could turn the tables around. What about if the Zakein likes this and bothers a lot of people in order to get the attention? We see, we've said it's so important that we do this. Leave it to the Talmud. The Talmud will... Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar amar minayin lezaken shelo yatriach. How do we know that a zaken should not be a pain in the neck? Because a zaken can be a pain in the neck. How do we know you shouldn't? Talmud Lamar, zaken v'yareta. Right? The word zaken, the old person, is right there together with yareta. Zaken v'yareta. That is to say, the zaken shall fear. Right? Not only the person who is doing the standing up and the honoring, but also the Zakein should fear God. So in other words, don't do it for your own self-aggrandizement. There is a reason why this is done, but don't take advantage of it. Don't take advantage of it. Okay. Now, where are we? Yes, okay. We're at the top of 32b3. Now we come to a third possibility. Or, we saw the first one was the, we learned about the Zakein, the mitzvah of standing up before the Zakein doesn't apply to a Zakein Ashmai. So that was the first opinion which we read. That's called in the Talmudic parlance the Tana Kama, the first Tana. The second Tana was Rabbi Yossi Aglieli, and he said, "Ein zaken ela zeshekana chokhmah." A zaken only applies to the one who is wise. Okay, and as I said, maybe the first two are really saying the same thing. Now we're going to see another point of view. Isi ben Yehuda Omer mipnei seva takum, where it says you shall get up before the white-haired, afilu kol seva b'mashma. this includes everybody with white hair. So in other words, Issa ben Yehuda is opposing the other points of view. He is saying that it applies to everybody who is old. It applies to everybody who is old. Okay? All right, now we go on. The Talmud says, Rabbi Yossi Aglili Hainu Tanakama. The Talmud says, Rabbi Yossi Aglili apparently is saying the same thing as the Tanakama, as the first Tana. As the first Tana. Remember, the first Tana said that we exclude the Zaken Ashmai. And we have defined the Zaken Ashmai as a Zaken who has no Torah. Okay?
Wasn't that the Russia part?
The Tosafot don't like that. Okay, they say it doesn't make sense because we can't respect the Russia, and here we're telling people that everybody has to respect the Zaken. Okay, so they put that aside. So, but we do see the first one is the Zaken Ashmai is the Zaken who has no Torah. That person is included. Afilu Zaken Ashmai. Even that person. The second one now.
No, I thought it says.
The third
says. Talmud Lomar
Zaken.
Ain't Zaken al Chacham.
Isn't that the first? But that's a Yachol Amar. Yachol.
Yachol afilu mipnei Zaken
Hashmai. Talmud Lomar Zaken. He's right. Dan is right. That's right. I said that wrong. Dan is right. So the first thing says. It sets up the possibility afilu zaken ashmai, and it rejects it, and it rejects that possibility. The second one then talks about yanik v'chakim, the one who is young and wise. Well, let's see what it says. Rabbi Yossi Aglili perhaps is the same as the Tanakama. Maybe these are just two sides of the same coin, what we had read first. He says, "Ika benayhu yanik v'chakim." The difference between them is somebody who is young and wise. Tanakama savar yanik v'chakim lo. The Tanakama takes the point of view that the mitzvah does not apply to somebody who is young and wise, just somebody who is old and wise. Right, Rabbi Yossi Aglili Savar. Rabbi Yossi Aglili takes the point of view afilu yanik v'chakim, even somebody who is young and wise.
And how old is he?
Well, doesn't matter. He could be 10 years old.
No, but when he's doing it, he might be young and.
Oh, he's his own self-interest. Yeah. No, could be. But beyond that, let's say your own self-interest. Realize what we are saying here. We are saying that the mitzvah in the Torah in Leviticus 19:32 was 31 or 32? Oh, was it 31 or 32? 1932. Leviticus 19:32. We started out saying that this is a mitzvah to get up before the old. According to the Talmud now, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, it may be a mitzvah to get up before the old who are wise. Mm-hmm. And it's a mitzvah to get up before the wise, no matter how old they are. Mm-hmm. To take off from what you just said, who are we talking about? In effect, we're talking about the rabbis of the Talmud.
That's what I'm thinking.
We're talking about an entire class of the population. And indeed, it could be said that they have their own self-interest. But I think it's really more than that. Certainly it's at least that. But I think more than that as well, because, again, it makes it so crystal clear that if Torah is the source of the respect, then in fact it can be reasonably argued that the young also can have Torah. Going back to what you said before, what we were talking about before, to some extent, information is power. And information, perhaps, reasonably, should be a source of a certain degree of respect. If it is even to a certain degree, to a significant degree, then the mitzvah of the Torah could apply to those who are only young, not old, but who have a lot of Torah. That then, according to the Talmud, is the position of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. Okay? So we now really have three different positions. One position of the Tanna Kamma is that the mitzvah applies to somebody who is old and wise. The second position, which is the position of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, is that the mitzvah applies to somebody who is old and wise, or wise.
Old and wise.
Old and wise, or wise. And the third possibility is that it applies to anybody who is old. Now, whether Isi ben Yehuda is excluding the possibility of the young is not so clear. It might be or it might not be. We just don't know.
But old and wise means wise.
Correct.
Only wise.
Correct. In both those cases, it's only wise.
Right. But other words, he's not saying anything about old.
Who?
Rabbi Yossi HaGlili.
Correct. Right. He's saying nothing about old.
Right.
To him, according to the Gemara in the discussion here, it is to extend the idea and not to oppose the idea. It is not to... the key thing here is knowledge. And we know that knowledge can be present in the old and it can be present in the young. And therefore, in both cases, since the key factor is knowledge, that's all we have to be concerned about. If it's in the old, you respect the old. If it's in the young, you respect the young. Okay?
Yes. We started this segment with Kabedet Abicha Bet Imecha, Mitzvat Prat, that we can buy ourselves out of it in certain cases.
We can buy ourselves, how can we buy ourselves?
If somebody else pay for the service, we pay for the service. And
well, we didn't conclude that.
Yeah, or the father, but it could be bought out in a certain way.
Possibly, but not halachically. Halachically, you had to do it. Remember, you have to remember the Gemara asked.
Do something, but
a lot of things.
Yeah, but if the parent is the dimension, as dementia, you can.
Oh, there was a way out? Correct.
Okay. All right. Now, here we went to the public. And you cannot buy yourself out. You veyarata. I mean, this is it.
Correct.
It's very interesting that you correct, go that from the private to the general, and it's more, you need more to oblige to the mitzvah.
Correct. So go back to what we said before. Maybe that is just because... Right. It's just standing up, number one. It doesn't cost anything.
Right.
And just
feel good.
It's a feel-good kind of thing. And a feel-good kind of thing, by the way, is not to be dismissed.
But it's also going from the private to the public.
That's right. Correct. You're going from the private to the public now.
And
that's a very different thing.
Public policy.
And only exactly. When you go to the public is veyarata. It doesn't say in the other mitzvah.
Correct. It does not
it's
say.
Very interesting.
Because the other one...
The governing is God and not the private.
There, I tried to argue on two levels, just to remind you of my argument. My argument was, on the one hand, in the private, there's a relationship that's involved. And that's not to be assumed in the public. Okay? And my second argument was the level of this being intuitive or counterintuitive. I don't know that this is intuitive in the public realm. That it should be intuitive that one would respond to this entire cohort of people who are elderly with a level of respect. I'm not sure that's intuitive. I kind of think that has to be taught. It has to be taught. The other in the private realm may conceivably be intuitive. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Maybe, though.
One would think so far that, in effect, the old are getting the benefit of the doubt as far as having accumulated wisdom over the years, that if you meet somebody on the bus, you really don't know in many instances who that person is, but you know you're assuming that over the course of years that person has been able to accumulate wisdom. I mean, sooner or pretty soon that person's going to be judged by God, but you now are in effect according that person the respect of wisdom. And actually, Barry, I just want to comment on one thing Barry said at the beginning when he talks to students. Is a saying going around on the internet, I don't know if it's attributed to Einstein or somebody, that knowledge is what you've accumulated after you've forgotten everything, the details of what you've learned in school. There's really something to that.
Sure it is. Exactly. Very nice. Very nice. Yes?
I was thinking and following up on your comments about the relationship and then moving to the public. So maybe this part about Viereta Melohecha is telling us that there are some things you learn about your relationship to God that you have to do. In other words, there is a relationship that's described here, but it's coming out of somehow a relationship with God that leads you to treat
him. Very good. Actually, what both of you said, I'll say a little bit, maybe I'll say a word now about that. I think that Barry said this before, and you've said it in a slightly different way, Dan. I think what is really central to this, and we will see it eventually as the argument finally matures itself, and it's going to take a while till it draws its own conclusion, because it's going to get involved in another subject, which is, you'll understand why it's going to get involved. It's going to get involved now in sages, in wise people, and the laws concerning specifically the sages. So you'll see that just the way the text is constructed, it's very mixed in. I think that both of you have really pointed to something that I think is really key here. I think that what we are seeing is a result of the notion of creation. To reflect on the theology of what is going on here. Theology is that there is a divine creator. And the divine creator makes a being which, after he sees the being, he says, this is very good. So the biblical view of the creation, particularly the human creation, is an extraordinarily positive view. I mean, that God should necessarily say that? It's surely not the only possibility. And one can well imagine, and frankly, in comparative traditions, if you take, for example, if you read the Timaeus of Plato. The Timaeus of Plato, which is a creation myth, story of creation, Platonic dialogue, Plato has two gods. There have to be two gods. There is a pure God, and then there is a demiurgos. The demiurgos is demis, half, is half. There's a secondary god. The secondary god creates the material creation. The pure god creates the world of ideas. Okay? Because the world of ideas is perfectly pure. It does nothing wrong. There's no such thing as a wrong pure idea. Right? Ideas are ideas. They're eternal. They live forever. However, in the world of matter, human beings do wrong constantly. They mess up all the time. And in Greek philosophy, it is because of the combination of spirit with matter. Matter really is the difficult thing here. So the good, pure God could not have created, in Platonic logic, this imperfect creation. Therefore, there has to be a secondary God. Contrast that with the story of creation, which we have in Genesis 1. By the time you get to Genesis 3, you have sin entering the picture. But as far as the creation goes, there's one God. The one God creates something, the entire universe, creates the human being, looks at the handiwork of his creation, and says that this is very good. Okay? The Torah says, behold, it is very good after the human creation. That's the word ma'od is thrown in. I would argue the following, that in Judaism there is a notion of the goodness of creation which is so central to the notion of the divine creator. today I went to the funeral of one of our great theologians, Professor Fritz Rothschild.
Professor who?
Fritz Rothschild. He's professor of the Jewish Theological Seminary. Died yesterday. And Rothschild wrote an extraordinary article many years ago in the first volume of the Melton series, came out in Jewish Education Study of the Bible. First volume was about the teaching of Bible. And he wrote an article about the divine artisan, that the metaphor for creation is the one of an artisan, that the artisan invests himself in the creation and shows, as in any artist, you learn about the artist from looking at the artwork. And that's the divine metaphor that we have in chapter 1 of creation. Well, having said that, having stated to you now that the central idea of the divine in the Bible is that there is a divine creator, that the creation is a product of the divine creativity, and that the divine, God himself, looks at it and says it is very good. The truth is that there is a problem with this idea. And the problem is, I would contend, that experience teaches us otherwise. I believe that ultimately, what religion is a combination of speculation and experience. That in fact, experience teaches us that the human being is not very good in many ways. First of all, in the obvious way, the ethical way. So that we know that's a basic preoccupation of the Bible, is ethics. But I would contend that there's an even more basic flaw in Genesis 1. And the basic flaw is something that everybody who has the benefit of getting old knows very well. That in fact, old is not good. Old is bad.
But walk into Chinatown, you get a very different feeling.
Listen to me, Francis. It's time to give up. Old is bad. In human experience, old is bad and not good. The Torah says that God created a good creation. How could God have created something that's bad? What I would argue is that this mitzvah solves the problem. In fact, when there is, naturally there is a reason for the creation. Creation is not so crazy. You know, it makes sense for young people to be healthy and for them to have sexual prowess and beauty and all. The truth is, it all makes a great deal of sense. The old, we know, there is wisdom that can come with age. There are a variety of things that can come with age. Usually physical prowess is not one of them. There are, thankfully, other things that can come with age, but not that. The physical creation itself, in fact, goes downhill. And the notion of a material creation made by God, which is very good, is contrary to our experience. Therefore, I would contend that what the Torah does is that the Torah inculcates a social imperative in order to maintain the original idea of creation. That is to say, even if it doesn't seem so good, you make it good. The way you're going to make it good is that you are going to stand up, v'adarta, you're going to make the old people beautiful. The old people are not beautiful. That's the fact. We are not as beautiful as the young are. And therefore, it is only through the social context that we can in fact create beauty. And it is socially that we create beauty. It is in our interactions with other people that we create beauty. And we do that across the board, not because of any relationship, but because of the very nature of every single human being's creation, that every one of us goes through this exactly the same experience. Right? So this is tying together, I think, with both of your observations here, if you'll allow me.
I think a couple of comments. I think it's interesting to see the way other religions have dealt with this. One very effective way is Hindu karma. Age, you accumulate karma because you live in this imperfect world. And the way you get out of that problem is to have reincarnation, so that you get another chance, which is an interesting.
That's an interesting way to deal with this. Is it the same? You're dealing with the same problem exactly.
You know, Bobby and I have been listening to hours of myths for the for the last couple of weeks, and the Greeks get out of the imperfect observations by just having the most horrible gods. I mean, gods who were petty and unfaithful and spiteful and violent and cruel, controlling humans. So humans are, you know, in fact, not even responsible for their actions, because who knows what it's reflecting in terms of what gods are, what tricks gods are playing on them at that moment. And that's a, you know, a whole other way of doing this. But I agree. I don't think being old and being less physically able is really a problem, though, in terms of perfect creation. I think that obviously presents some problems in terms of a hunter-gatherer society, and there may be a whole lot of evolution that's played out around that. But I don't think it's a problem in terms of people's respect for the elderly as sources of wisdom.
That's it.
But it's wisdom at a couple of levels. Mm-hmm. It's the wisdom, Ira's comment that hunter-gatherers probably didn't have to keep grandfathers around, but they had to keep grandmothers around, because grandmothers actually teach their children how to take care of the babies, because that's not instinctive either in humans. And there are real skill sets there that are really, really vital. So I think the notion of the elder and the elders, the power of the elders throughout, is in fact a reflection of a real repository of knowledge. And so the perfection of creation is no longer physically obvious, but it takes on this other dimension. I think that, just to build on the idea, the big problem in our society now is confusing data with wisdom and knowledge. We transfer.
That's it.
Just say
that.
That's what Henry said. I think that's the build on, is that there's total confusion about this in our society right now. Total.
Here. Dan.
I like what you said. The in Genesis 1, of course, there is no getting old in the beginning. So that creature is Tov Maod, and maybe we can look at the Torah as a vehicle for, it provides a way for man to bring mankind back to that status.
Exactly, exactly. Fully agree, totally, 100%, 100%.
I was going to say, since we read the this past Shabbat, the idea of the horror of Amalek is not the attack on the Jewish people passing through it. It's the idea that he attacked the elderly, and presumably some infirm people. But there's a idea that behavior towards the elderly is, if he had attacked from the front, presumably this wouldn't have been a compulsion to destroy them and erase their name from history. So it would have attacked healthy young people. So it's the same. So I just think.
Just to conclude, yes, Francis.
I've worked with a variety of people, variety of age groups, variety of intellectual levels, et cetera, et cetera. And I have not found much respect for the aged in many of my tenants. Of course, I pick a particular group. They're dumb. I have a wide range of intellectual levels. I have some very bright people. I have some idiots. But the idiots vote too.
Just let me conclude. I think that what we'd like to just think about, I think you feel the importance of some things giving life meaning. To what extent are intellectual attainments central to that? To what extent is the study of Torah central to that? To what extent is the doing of the Torah or the living of the community central to that? Or to what extent should we perhaps extend the idea to say that life itself is the greatest teacher that there is? You know, we can go from a book to the book to all books to no books. You know, where do you go with this? Can you go to any and all of those places and still come out in the same place in terms of what we require of people toward the old? That's next week.
Thank you.
Well, dear.
Is there special condemnation for those who are learned and not good?
Someone is cooking.
I mean, do they make acknowledgement that you could be learned and still not be a good person after that? And is there a special place or division for someone like that?
No,
really love. Yeah.
Because it doesn't come through that there is but benefit from that. But.
Yeah, I mean, it came across a little bit in the Tosafot, I think, before, with the Zaken Hashmai, namely.
But they dropped the Rasha, that's what I was.
Yeah, it was the Rasha. Yeah. They wanted to get the Rasha out of there.
Right.
Because
so is there an acknowledgement and a special punishment or whatever doled out to those who should know better, who have been educated?
I'll leave you there. The whole section, Maimonides has a whole section at the end of the Mishneh Torah, Rochot Mamrim, about the Zaken who is done evil.
Wouldn't we study that? You could be, but you could. You could ease the punishment with a little zchus that you picked up, so not the same.
That's another stuff.
So, I want to ask you a question. I noticed that in the commandments, first comes Zechor et HaShabbat, then comes Kabed et Avicha
ve'et Imecha.
In Leviticus comes first Ishimo Vaviv Tira'u ve'Shabtotai Tishmo. Is there any significance? Does it say something about the importance of Yerat as opposed to Kibud?
I haven't thought of that. That's a good observation. You're right. I have to think about that. I'm wondering whether Francine makes any reference to that in her book on the Shabbat, because she does talk about the order of the commandments in the Ten Commandments. That's a tremendous amount of literature on that, because you're sort of the honor of the Shabbat is the transition between the divine commandments and the human commandments. So the Shabbat is the transition between those two. But you have an additional observation, which is it's turned around in Leviticus, which is true.
I don't know the reason why it's there at all.
Yeah, yeah. That's, well, I don't have an answer for it.
I want to ask your opinion about something. I was very influenced by the last few weeks. You know, my older boy is engaged.
Yeah,
immediately.
Muslims have to live your life.
Her parents are planning the wedding.
There's a conflict
because she wants a simple wedding. She's from a family of three girls. The sister, one of the sisters married last summer, was like the Olympic Games, apparently.
No, it has to do with age.
the parents want to have a big wedding. Hundreds of guests, because they come from an extended family all over the world, and all friends and family come. And
the Sephardi background, you said, wasn't it?
Well, they're Iraqis.
Iraqis.
It's funny, we were out in LA, and near where we were staying on Sunset Boulevard was a big Sephardic shul, huge. So I know Joe Davis, the president of his shul. I said, is this the shul you go to?
You know, he was in med school for 2.5 years and quit.
He says, no,
Jewish
Sephardi.
Mother, I said, she must
I
have
said,
had
so?
A lot of
I said,
no, he
said, Greeks. They belong to an Iraqi. So in any case, I was speaking to my son, and he said, yes, and Nadine was so upset because her father won't give. She wants to, she comes home crying, she wants to elope, she doesn't want to go through all this fighting. I sent him, first I spoke, then I sent him home. I told him, in a case like this, he and his fiance should defer to the wishes of the parent. And I actually feel that way. I don't think he's... But am I wrong? I mean, I don't like to interfere, but I think...
I think you're right, but I understand where they're coming from, too.
Yeah.
It's very hard for them.
But it's creating a lot of tension.
Yeah.
A lot of tension, and I feel that...
Because young people are directed at themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I was like that, too. I remember what I wanted, and...
For your wedding? I don't,
even for a wedding.
I don't even want to get married. Well, my mother-in-law and my mother lived a few blocks apart, so
right.
They had enough. We didn't have to be included. But I think this, I mean, it was made a big impression on me.
Yeah, I think that...
It takes an effort. It takes an effort. But as I told them, sometimes you will get more pleasure from making... them happy than you will by getting your own way.
Correct. In the long run, that's really a good thing to do.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Here, Sevatakum, the Zaken is used to it everywhere he goes. The person who has the Derech Eretz to get up, I think, has a certain amount of pleasure, particularly if he gets a nod from you. Is this related to the idea of